technical problems with the laptop and the projector. Now, but we'll continue with the hard copies that I hope we have in front of us. As soon as the technicalities are sorted out, we'll then continue with the presentation beamed. Yeah. So in the meantime, we'll continue. Let me declare the meeting open and welcome honorable members, the Department of Energy, I suppose led by Mr. Makube. And there are apologies both sides, from the members as well as from the department. From the members, the Honorable Tikhale, Honorable Lont, Honorable Vauda, Honorable Timunye. I have requested the Honorable Ntebe to attend the Portfolio Committee on Public Works. If you remember, there's this bill that was returned to Parliament by the President on the expropriation. The Portfolio Committee is dealing with that today, so that we also are aware of what the process is. So I requested that you should attend it on that meeting. Honorable Makue just told me we're just coming out from the meeting of chairpersons. He gave me a note to say he has been asked or requested by the deputy chairperson of the NCOP. There's a delegation from Nigeria here in Parliament. The chairperson of international relations, he has been asked to be part of that meeting. But he will join us later, so he will be part of this meeting. I have been informed by Mr. Makube that there's a policy for the minister and the deputy minister, and also the DG. Our meeting is taking place at the same time as the Portfolio Committee on Energy. There's a issue that they've been invited by the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee to address that relate to petrol. Just happened that these meetings are taking place on Sunday. The energy meetings in Portfolio Committee take place on Tuesday. Also our select committee on economic and development, which also includes the Department of Energy, takes place on Tuesday. So there's a clash. So they had to divide their delegation accordingly. So those are the apologies, honorable members. Thank you. Honorable Cowley.
Thanks, sir. What the other departments normally do on situations like that is that they would allow the minister to go to the other house and the deputy minister to go to another house. Now, I don't know about this department. Why do they have both the minister and deputy minister go to the same meeting at the same time when there are two meetings that are taking place at the same time?
Okay. Honorable Faber.
Chairperson, yes. I've actually got a very big problem with that, and I'll tell you why. It is unfortunate that the political heads is not here and available. There might be tough questions, especially on energy. We know all about the nuclear energy. Officials cannot give us political answers. They have no mandate to give political answers. So when, unfortunately, we must understand we are in politics and there will be questions that will be asked. And the questions that I want to ask, unfortunately, I won't be able to ask here, because not one of the officials sitting here, I don't care if it's the DG, will be able to give me an answer on straight-out questions which is political, because most of it has got political implications and questions. And I think this is what my honourable colleague was asking. Now, Chairperson, I don't want to say meetings can't go on, but this has been a tendency that's been going on for quite a while. In the fourth parliament, we sent whole divisions of staff back to Pretoria. And it was not done by a DA member or an ANC member, it was done by a committee that said, we cannot have this delegation here if the political head is not here to actually give us some of the answers that we need. Now, Chairperson, this is not a once-off that the minister just doesn't pitch now. The Minister of Energy has not been coming to this committee at all, to be quite frank. She might come from my province, but the last time I think I saw her was in the Northern Cape and sitting and smiling in the NA. It is unacceptable, and I want us to note that this apology for going to the NA's portfolio committee, I'm afraid it makes the NCOP another second house. It makes us another second-hand committee, and I think this is what it is all about. I understand that there is cabinet meetings that do take place, and then this is why I asked the last previous session, I don't know if you remember when Honourable Eddie was sitting there, that we asked that sometimes we alter the Tuesday and Wednesday meetings so that the ministers can, on a Tuesday, like today, because usually Wednesdays is the cabinet lehotlas, am I correct? So we asked that the ministers can be at least be there here on a Tuesday. Now, when it's on a Tuesday, which this meeting usually takes place on, and the minister don't come, I've got a problem with that. And Chairperson, I think we as a committee should write a letter to the minister and say, if she or the deputy minister cannot come, then please, don't let all the officials come all the way. There's cost implications towards the taxpayer at the end of the day, and we're getting a report. But we can ask questions on what we see here, on figures and stuff. But the real political questions that we are here also to ask, we can't ask the officials, and it's not their fault, to be quite frank. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Shalom.
Chairman, let me also stress the fact that we had a meeting last where we said National Parliament should not be seen as the principal of the NCOP. And we agreed that we are going to treat each other the same way. But if people would decide to go to NPA and leave the officials, not to say we are undermining the officials, we know that they are the people who want to win the war, who are helping. But you want the political head because you are politician. Therefore, I would also like to stress the fact that the letter should be written to say we want them to account. Thank you.
I think that is a clear decision that is been taken by the meeting, that a letter should then be written. But also we'll follow the protocols of the NCOP in doing so. Thank you very much. Let me also take this opportunity that we should introduce ourselves. My name is Mandla Khai. I'm the chairperson, Khai is spelled R-A-Y-I. I'm the chairperson of the Select Committee on Economic and Business Development. I'm from the Eastern Cape. I will allow members to introduce themselves. Thank you.
My name is Mosasini Shabanga, a member of the Select Committee. I'm from the state.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Good morning. My name is Ndomuhle Kaula, a member of the committee. I'm from the Kingdom of KwaZulu Natal.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Willem Faber, and I represent the province with the most sun, where all the solar comes from. I don't even have to say the biggest province, most important province, the Northern Cape.
morning, Mr. Makubela and the team. My name is Lucy Maguebo. I'm from the Eastern Cape. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's allow the department to introduce itself, your delegation, Mr. Makubela.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members. A very good morning to you all. As indicated, my name is Tshidiso Makubela. I am leading this delegation from the department. I am the DDG responsible for petroleum regulation within the department. I'm here with other DDGs. In fact, the full complement of DDGs is here. Chairperson, perhaps it may be better if I do the introduction to save time. On the far right, Mr. Mbele, Jacob Mbele, is responsible for, is a DDG responsible for programs and projects, but in fact, it is the National Electrification Program. He is the one that is driving that program within the department. Then next to him is Mr. Ompiapane, who is responsible for energy policy planning as well as clean energy. So the renewable energy program also falls under him, the solar water heater program. And then on my left, Mr. Zizamele Mbambo. He is the DDG for nuclear energy within the department. And then next to him is Mr. Lucas Mulaudzi, who is the head of corporate services. And then on his left, is our Chief Financial Officer, Ms. Chetty. The CFO's left is Ms. Ndebele, who is in the office of the DG, together with Ms. Nobiefu, who also is in the office of the DG. That's us, Chetty.
Thank you very much, Chair. The parliamentary staff introduce themselves.
Good morning, I'm Nosby Wadi, the committee secretary.
Good morning, I'm Mr. Rasmus from committee section.
Good morning, everybody. Ismail Hussain from PMG.
Good morning, I'm Zubele Moshe, the committee reference.
Good morning, I'm Kovisam
Kana
from committee section.
Thank you very much, sir. We'll allow them, Mr. Macbeth, that we receive the presentation on behalf of the department, the annual report.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And once again, Chair, I wish to indicate that perhaps the challenge that has, I don't want to make excuses for my principal, but I do want to say that one of the challenges we faced in the last financial year that we are coming to report on is the state of our SOEs. Our SOCs have, to a large extent, let us down in terms of governance, and I think the reason that our principals are there is that it would not be it actually would be important that I indicate to this committee that the situation at PetroSA is quite dire, and there is a need for some kind of intervention, which is is of a, in my view, of an emergency nature. The situation is quite dire. But Chair, we thank the committee, yourself and the committee, for allowing us the opportunity to come and present on our performance of the last financial year. The presentation is in two forms, really. We wanted to start with the financial performance, which will be done by the CFO, and then followed by a presentation on the service delivery program. But I want to say, Chair, that in the last financial year, one thing that we can indicate is that through a number of interventions from the department, we believe that we have contributed in stabilizing the energy situation in the country. So that was one thing that we believe that was done quite well, with the team led by Mr. Apane spending quite a lot of time with ESCOM in trying to make sure that the energy situation stabilizes. In the last financial year also, we believe that the situation with regards to liquid fuels did stabilize. The one area that we can admit here that is still remained a challenge last year was the whole area of liquefied petroleum gas. I think that one is still remains something that needs to be cracked, we are hard at work trying to deal with that. There are a number of issues there that perhaps we can get into during the course of the presentation. Also, an area where we need to admit the area of legislative framework. We did not table all the amendments that we had hoped to table in the last financial year, and there are reasons for that, and perhaps we can be allowed to expand on that when Mr. Apane is presenting. The issue of resources of the department still remains a challenge. We had said, I believe, sometime before to this very committee that we can do more with less. I think that perhaps that might have been taken literally, and we find ourselves squeezed now to a point where it is difficult for us to contribute optimally in making sure that this economy is able to turn around because of the squeeze on the budget of the department. Lastly, Chair, from my side, is the issue that I started with, that the governance within our SOEs has really presented challenges for us. In the same financial year, a number of us have had to go and assist in these SOEs in terms of just the bolstering governance, but it remains a challenge. It is in the financial year that we're reporting on that one of the SOEs decided that they would want to, rotate, as it were, what they call, but it's really a sale of our crude oil. That matter has been a subject of investigation in the last financial year, on the financial year that is ending now. And we would hope that at the right time we'll come to the committee and report on that matter. Chair, with that, I think from my side, that really is the overview of how things proceeded in the 15-16 financial year. And with your permission, Chair, I'll hand over to the CFO.
Good morning, Chairperson, honourable members, colleagues from the department and other colleagues present. I present the annual financial statements as at 31st of March 2016. Chairperson, I will keep you on the slide and I'll explain the figures. The explanations are in the subsequent slides, but for presentation purposes, I will keep you on the slide so that I can explain a bit better. This is the income statement as of 31st of March 2016. The annual appropriation. This is the final budget that the department received of 7.267 billion. The departmental revenue for the year under review, we had 805 million. And included in the revenue is the petroleum license fees, recovery of some debts, and there's some interest and other small revenue that we would have received. We've also received aid assistance, which is under note number 4, and we have received 291 million, and the 291 is made up of the Swiss Agency for Development, money that we went to Sanedi, Kingdom of Denmark, the EU Commission, we received GBS funding, also for Sanedi, Kingdom of Denmark again for clean energy, and the EU Commission, we also received money for Sanedi. In total, we received 291 million. Each year, we receive aid assistance, which we've got to account for in terms of funding agreements that we sign, and we have account to National Treasury. Whatever is unspent, depending on the conditions of the grant or the donation received, we might have to surrender the funding back to Treasury. So in total, we've had 8.3 billion in terms of revenue for the department. In terms of total expenditure, current expenditure, 509 million. Included in that amount is compensation of employees of 296 million. That is all the salary bill, the entire salary bill for the department. Included in that amount also is goods and services, 213 million, and this is for all operational expenditure. Transfers and subsidies, which is the biggest amount on presented on expenditure. It is 6.8 billion, and I will give you the breakdown of the 6.8 billion. It's all our transfers to our entities and other implementing agencies. Sanedi received 64.8 million. We had membership fees of 29.5 million. The energy efficiency and demand side management to municipalities, 177 million. Nexa receives 580 million. The nuclear regulator receives 21 million. INEP ESCOM, 3.6 billion. INEP municipalities, 1.9 billion. INEP non-grid, 156 million. And then there are small consumable amounts, giving us a total of 6.8 billion in terms of transfers. Expenditure for capital assets, there's a small spend of 4.4. And then in terms of our total expenditure, it would be 7.3 billion. We have a surplus for the year of 1 billion. The 1 billion is broken down into voted funds being the money we receive from the fiscus of 125 million. That is unspent of the budget we received. Departmental revenue of 805 million. That money is just a timing issue. It's money we receive, which we have to surrender back to National Treasury. So it is, although it looks unspent, we have to surrender after year end. When we receive the money in the department, we cannot retain it. It must go back to National Treasury. Aid assistance. The monies that were surrendered was 105 million. So I'm going to move away from the slide.
That's on the slide.
Okay.
That's going through my Twitter. I just wanted on the departmental revenue. It was 805 million. I know we'll ask question after, but I'm just interested on this one. That in 2014-15, it was 5 million. There's a jump to 805. Can you clarify that? on the same slide.
Chair, I will just find it in my book and I'll give it to you.
You will start
okay?
When you answer all
could
the
I?
Questions.
All right, thank you, Chair. I will definitely answer.
All right.
Somebody's taking the crystal stone from me. If I move to the balance sheet. Chair, here again, I'll keep you on the slide and I'll explain every figure. Unauthorized expenditure, we have a 14.8 million. This figure remains unchanged from the previous financial year. It is money that, at the cusp of the split of the department from DME, there was a transfer that happened. It was used for its right purposes and it went to the right recipient. Unfortunately, it went over the incorrect financial year. It happened at the cusp of the split of the department. So it was just a timing issue, but it remains an unauthorized expenditure. We have been to SCOPA to present this unauthorized expenditure. We haven't heard an outcome as yet. But Chair, it happened in 2010-11 year.
And when you went to SCOPA?
We went in 2013-14 financial year. There was no response. But I want to assure the committee the money was used for its intended purposes and received by the correct recipient. It was just in the incorrect year, from the incorrect vote it was paid. That was the only issue that needed to be explained at SCOPA. Cash and cash equivalents, that's the money that we have at year end, and we do not retain any funding. It goes back to National Treasury. Whether we receive it as a profit in the department, even if it's interest on the bank account, it's get surrendered back to National Treasury. And that's no under note number 12, it tells you exactly the breakdown of the amount. Prepayments and advances, there's a million. Receivables includes fruitless and wasteful expenditure. It's note number 15. During the financial year, that's 15-16, we did have fruitless expenditure to the value of 12,000, which is a very small amount, but it has through normal processes in the department, being referred to Labour Relations for investigation. If we find there has been wrongdoing on the side of any official, due action is taken. If it needs to be condoned, that process is also followed. And we do report to the to AG on the matter as well. Under non-current assets, we have investments of 2205. These is an investment of 2.2 million. It's one rand shares. At Nexa. We are the shareholders in Nexa. 100% shareholder in Nexa. Total assets, 128 million. In terms of liabilities, we have current liabilities. Voted funds to be surrendered to National Treasury, 125.5. This figure is the money that we did not spend from the fiscus, our budget that we received, which I explained earlier on. And the balance are small amounts that will be have to be paid in the next financial year. Chair, I'm now going to move to note number 31. There are notes that are not indicated on the income statement or balance sheet, but it's additional disclosure notes. And one of the disclosure notes that I want to explain is disclosure note number 31. This was the D&D, the decommissioning and decontamination liability that we used to hold for Nexa. Sorry, Chair, I meant to go to note number 35. My apologies. It used to be the decommissioning and decontamination liability we held on behalf of Nexa. We had it from the time of our split from DME, but through the years there has been a lot of issues raised on whose liabilities and in whose books this liability should reside. And over the years we've had many changes. We've had the liability reassessed. We had a number of engagements with Nexa, National Treasury, on the matter. Eventually, the department took a decision to have a legal opinion sought, which we did. And the legal opinion I have attached to the presentation as well. We've had an opening balance of 3.6 billion. We've transferred the entire provision back to NEXA. So it brings down the balance that we carry in the books of DOE as a no balance. We have engaged NEXA in terms of taking it onto their balance sheet. We've also engaged AG to ensure that the right process was followed. Chair, I want to state that the opinion is attached here. The opinion was shared with NEXA and their boards and their governance structures as well, and all parties have agreed that the liability now resides in the books of NEXA. That takes care of note number 35. Okay, Chair, if I move on to the last two slides, it's just a summary of our audit findings. In terms, we've had findings from the AG. One of the findings was on oversight. We had a non-compliance with our state-owned company oversight framework, which has subsequently been addressed. We did have findings on our predetermined objectives. They had found that certain targets were excluded. It has been also rectified. In finance, there was an understatement of commitments, which was also rectified subsequent to year-end. Transfer payments, we had a non-compliance with the DORA, that's the DORA Act. Quarterly reports were not submitted within 45 days to National Treasury. Corrective actions have been taken, has taken place here. Procurement, we had deviations that was not reported timely to National Treasury. And then the last one was information with the IT department. We've had the approval of the ICT plan, which could not be provided for the audit. And I think corrective action has subsequently taken place there. Chair, that brings me to the last slide, which is the audit outcomes for the last 5 years, and which I present that it was unqualified throughout the 5 years. And in this financial year, which I present now, we have received a clean audit. With that, I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. We will combine together with the annual report, the performance of programs, and then members will then ask questions on all of them.
Chair, through you, I'm going to request Mr. Malawuzi to moderate this section. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, members, Mr. Matubela and colleagues. Chair and members, I'm going to present the performance information in relation to the deliverables reflected in the 2016 annual report. You will see that we consist of six programs. Their names are there, Chair, which is one, administration, policy and training, like Mr. Matubela indicated, petroleum and petroleum product regulation, electrification and energy program and project, nuclear energy, and the last one, which is clean energy. In the next slide there, Chair, you'll see the name of the branches. The second column will show you the number of targets in the APP, which reflect in the 15-16 annual report. And then you also have the column that speaks about the number of achieved targets, partially achieved and not targets, but also linked to the budget as it was presented by the CFO in terms of what each branch was allocated and what amount was spent at the end of the financial year. In terms of the target, Chair, you will notice that we had 76 targets combined across all the branches. And if you go to the next column, you'll see that out of that 76, the one that were achieved without any glitches were 39. And then they partially achieved because some lot of work would have been done there towards the delivery of the output 29, and then the not achieved is 8. And then it also shows the figures in terms of the quantums, the allocations, as well as the percentage out of the total allocation. The percentage in terms of the achieved out of 100% of 76 targets, Chair, is 51. And then partially achieved, you get 38. Not achieved, you got 11. But that in total, it gives you still the percentage of 98.2% in terms of performance. As we proceed with the presentation, Chair and members, in relation to the targets that were partially achieved and those that were not achieved, you will see that there are indications in terms of the interventions, how we plan to deal with those underperforming areas. The next slide, Chair, speaks about the highlights in terms of the achievements in relation to the targets that have been set, as articulated in the slide that is consolidating the number of branches as well as the planned and achieved targets. The 20-year liquid fuel master plan was incorporated as part of the IAP and tabled at the DG cluster in the year under review, Chair. 75% of license applications were approved, and then 50% of those were BEE ownership. The National Electrification Master Plan was developed as well, Chair. And municipalities which were electrified, you can see the numbers there. You have 72,399. And then in terms of that, there were additionals which were done also by ESCOM, which is 158613. And that put together gives you the 231,000 electrifications that were done. Two new bulk substations were built, and additional substations were also upgraded, which means it's two new plus six upgrades. A total of 1,956 site compliance inspections were conducted. These are the inspections that we do at the service stations where we purchase our fuels in the form of petrol, diesel, and so forth. And the target that we set ourselves for that particular year, Chair, was 1,500. And you'll see that we would have exceeded that target with a number of 456 inspections. 1,847 samples were collected and analyzed during the year. This is to check as to whether the type of fuel as well as the quality of fuel that we buy is clean and has not been tampered with. 8 nuclear safeguard inspections were done, and then additional 4 nuclear audits were conducted, and 4 nuclear security inspections were also conducted under the year in question, Chair. 8 nuclear awareness events were conducted in order to demystify the thinking about the nuclear, and that was done due to interest from the various stakeholders as far as nuclear is concerned. In terms of energy efficiency, Chair, we would have set ourselves to say we were going to make a saving of 0.5 terawatt per hour. But we are happy to say that we were able to exceed the target by 0.6 terawatts, which is encouraging department to put systems that would want to save energy consumption. The draft national biogas strategy was completed. However, the scope has been expanded to cover the biomass as well. As I continue, Chair, again, as far as highlights are concerned, is that in line with the national commitment to transition to a low-carbon economy, the integrated resource plan of 17,800 megawatts of the 2030 target is expected to generate is expected to be generated from the renewable energy sources with 5,000 megawatts to be operational by 2019. And a further 2,000 megawatts will also be there by 2020. That will be operationally cumulative. In order to adhere to these targets and the power invested in the Department of Energy, the following new capacity determination have been made. 13,225 megawatts of renewable energy, and that comprises of those various mixes, which is the PV of 4,725 megawatts, wind of 6,360 megawatts, as well as the balance of 1,200 megawatts from hydro. And we also have the further energy mix that is coming from the landfill, the gas, the biomass, the biogas, and the small-scale renewable energy program. 2,500 megawatts was designated from coal, and then 1,800 megawatts from coal generation, 3,126 of gas was fired from plants, when 2,609 megawatts was imported from hydro. In the past 4 years, Chair, we have successfully connected 43 renewable independent power producers to the grid, which had an additional of about 2,350 megawatt capacity to the national grid. The next slide is still the continuation of the highlights in terms of what we have done. The total project in terms of the windows, which were announced during the year under review, is to the amount of 192 billion, and that in itself assisted the government as well as the department to make investment in terms of the structured and secured local community equity, which means the dividend in terms of the amount which was invested will be earned by the various community in terms of equity share. To date, all shareholding for local communities have been structured through the establishment of community trust. For project in bid window 1 to bid window 4, as well as qualifying communities would have received 29.2 billion net income over the life of the project, which is for 20 years. The 30.7 billion spent on BEE during the constructions of bid window 1 and bid window 2 already exceeded the 26.6 billion that had originally been set for the IPP. Bid window 3 projects have only just started construction, and the employment opportunities there, you can see, it's over 100%, and it exceeds the number that we have been planned at the inception. We have also procured private speaker stations to the capacity of about 1,000 megawatts that is going to be used when there are larger demand than what ESCOM generators can produce. This was done in the Eastern Cape and completed in September 2015, producing 330 megawatts. And the other one that is still underway and to be completed is the one that is in KZN, which will produce also additional megawatts for the purposes of energy generation. In terms of the transfers through DORA, we start with the municipal and non-grid connections at the end of the financial year. you can see the beneficiaries there in terms of each province, as well as the connections that were made in that particular province, the amount that was allocated per province in terms of those connections, as well as the achievements of the connections in terms of numbers per province. On this one chair, you can see each province has benefited. There was a total of connections which were set. There was also an allocation in terms of funding that was provided for connections in that particular province. As you could see, Chair and members, is that the figures speak for themselves there in terms of the output that would have been benefited by each and every province. So, Chair, in terms of that one, I will leave it for the analysis of the members, so that if there are questions, then you should be able to zoom into that particular slide and be able to seek for clarity where it's necessary in terms of the municipal non-grid connections that were executed during the year under review. Again, Chair, the DORA transfer to ESCOM. You have the list of provinces, we have the planned connections, we have the total connections, and the budget spent per province in respect of the work that was done by the money transferred to ESCOM for doing connections in the various provinces. The other slide gives you a consolidation of the two. In other words, the first slide, which was for municipalities, and the second slide, which was for ESCOM, and it gives you the summary, the consolidated of the two per province in terms of the planned connections, the total actual connections, including rollover to date. So that, again, it will assist in terms of making follow-up in order to find out certain information in relation to a particular province per deliverable. Having said that, Chair, in terms of all the activities that we would have executed in relation to our set targets, we had some challenges. And you can see the first challenge speaks to the infrastructure. To say the current infrastructure is constrained, and there is a challenge of connecting additional households. And as far as non-grid program is concerned, there is a slow rollout of non-grid connection due to internal practical shortcomings. Current non-grid systems are not addressing all the basic electricity needs of customers. But CFO has indicated that there's also a problem in terms of funding and cost of connection. Like for instance, in INEP there are problems, there are also issues that relate to the budget cuts. And then some of the projects are difficult to implement because the work needs to be done in the deep rural areas, and connections cost to go there in terms of putting those specific infrastructure programs are a little bit of a challenge. Other challenges relate to lack of resources within the department, and there is applications that has been lodged in terms of that, but however, we are also having some delays in getting those responses in terms of how are we going to deal with those specific challenges. As far as municipalities are concerned, the INEP program has put up some intervention measures in terms of how are they going to be interacting or engaging the municipalities in order to address the issues that would pose a challenge as far as the connections that relate to the money transfer to municipalities are concerned. And that also applies to ESCOM. So the department has developed those mechanisms and systems of doing the monitoring, evaluation, as well as a meeting with the relevant stakeholders in order to discuss those challenges, but also to make follow-ups and make suggestions where it's necessary in terms of mitigating and trying to improve the control environment in those particular spaces. I'm on slide 34 that speaks about the strategy to overcome areas of underperformance. That relates to vacancy rate within the department. As at the end of March 2015, our vacancy rate was partially achieved. We were in areas with 1.21% in terms of vacancy rate, whereas the threshold by DPSA, they are saying that we should not be less than 10%. But that was because of the turnaround strategy in terms of prioritizing the filling of vacancies at the time.
But
10% fresh month. 10%. It should be up to 10%. In other words, if it's more than 10%, then it becomes a problem. It means you are not able to deliver your output because
of your capacity. You should not be less.
I'm sorry, my correction, Chairperson. So we were left with 1.2. We were left with 1.2 at a time. And when you look at the disabled persons, the threshold chair again is 2%. It's 2%. So we were at 1.97 at the time, meaning we still led to meet the 2% with 3 or something. So which is something that we are working hard, Chairperson, to address that. And then when we talk about women in SMS, we were at 36%, which is partially achieved. But as we identify vacant positions, prioritize them, and make a decision to fill, our target will be towards achieving that particular area. On the MPAT part is that there are various key responsibility areas where we were marked less than 3. The minimum score to be at an average level or acceptable level is 3. We have developed a turnaround implementation strategy, and this matter is being presented at the various management structures for improvement. So all the issues that they would have identified in terms of our weaknesses there, we have developed an implementation strategy. The various key responsibility managers are reporting progress on a regular basis at EXCO and other management structures. Chair, the other slides that are reflected here, I don't know if Chair and members would want me to present, but they are actually talking about the intervention strategies in relations of the not achieved and the partially achieved targets that I have indicated to earlier. So this refers to say, if the Chair wants me to go through them, I'll do that, but in relation to each and every area of underperformance in the previous slide, where I've said not achieved, partially achieved, the relevant information of correcting or mitigating and enhancing that control environment is contained in the slides that are remaining, Chair. So I stand to request the Chair and the members to indicate where I should proceed, or we will refer to them as an annexure when the relevant DDGs are responding to the questions of not achieved and partially achieved as under 2 in the opening of the summary of the slides that are presented earlier.
Okay, I think Mr. Makubele wants to say something before I respond.
No, Chair, I think maybe if we get that guidance from yourself, it would help before maybe I have some concluding remarks, but I think getting the guidance would assist.
No, I was also going to say, because it is in the document that we've already received. But in fact, I would like to commend the department for doing this. I'm not sure whether to what extent it has addressed some of the potential questions from members. The fact that you identify underperformance, and also you tell us how you are addressing the corrective measures you are embarking upon. I think I wish all departments could do that. That's what I also saw as a good point. Some departments wait for members to ask questions on underperformance. But with this presentation, you highlight the underperformance, and then you come up with the strategies of how you overcome those areas of underperformance. But I'm saying that it doesn't stop then members from asking questions if some of the areas that they would be asking on are not covered under the you know, the strategies that they are embarking upon. I'm not sure, usually with regard to concluding remarks, I normally allow maybe the minister or the head of delegation when we have finished with the questions and answers. But I don't know if you wanted just to emphasize on some of the points before the members ask questions.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, Chair, it was just to conclude this part of the presentation. Just to, with your permission, Chair, to just say that what, Chair, we find, and I'm glad, Chair, we perhaps there will be an opportunity for engagement with the committee. But I think for us, Chair, we find that the issue of stable and focused leadership is very critical to us achieving what we have to achieve. And I think the filling of the post of the Director General, I think, assisted in the sense that we then had that stability. But I also think, Chair, the one thing that we want to be honest here about is that we believe that we need to be honest about skills gaps. I think we talk about skills gaps, but I don't think we have an honest appraisal of what we're talking about. And those skills gaps do exist. We are confronted with them. But I think the fiscal challenges are actually making it difficult for us to try and close them. So I think that is one area that I thought is important to, because when we do our own assessment of our performance, those are some of the issues that we've engaged on as the EXCO. But, Chair, the other matter, which also the guidance of the committee would assist, is intersectoral contestation. As a policy department, we are contested. We find ourselves contested a lot, generally. And that is an area that perhaps would require, interventions beyond what, as technocrats, we can. But there's a lot of intersectoral contestation in energy. I think the one that is playing itself out now is the one, of Eskom and renewable energy and so on. But there are many others. It's just this one is an example. Then, as I indicated, the oversight over SOEs, we spend a lot of time in the 15-16 year just doing work of people who are highly paid, who are supposed to deliver on the mandate of those SOEs. And as a result, you may find that some of our areas lag behind because of that. The last one, Chair, I think that we always have to confront as you know, when we do our jobs is what I would refer to as interest group management, managing lobbyists, managing lobbyists for a particular energy carrier. As this collective, you find that a gas lobby is lobbying only for gas to the exclusion of renewables, and a nuclear lobby is lobbying for. So those are some of the areas that we've had to manage. But I am raising these because they continue even into this financial year that is about to end, and perhaps it is really a call for guidance as well as we know that we are here to account, but I think the wisdom of the committee on some of these areas would also assist us and bolster our resolve to have an energy sector that you know, delivers to the people of South Africa. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. At this stage, I will then allow members to ask questions. Questions across that will include financial information and also program performance information. But then relevant DDGs will just know their areas and then respond accordingly. Let me start right at the back. Honorable Makwebu, followed by Honorable Faba, Honorable Kaula, and Honorable Shabang. In that order. Good, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. And my question is just one question. You know, to enable us to understand, you know, your challenges and where you are at, and with the strategies that you have put in place, you know, at the remedial action, you know, to deal with the underperformance that you have since considered to. I have a problem because you are not clear in your report. What do I mean by that? You know, if you look at all the programs, you simply say where you have not achieved, partially achieved, then you put a turnaround strategy. But my question is, what do you mean by partially achieved? That's the first question. How do you quantify that? Because one would want to understand when you partially achieved, probably if we were to use percentages, you say we didn't achieve, which would be 100%, we've achieved 40% of what we set to achieve. You don't quantify that. So you're vague, and it's not helping us to assist you. So you don't need to be vague. You need to say if partially achieved, find a way of reporting or saying we have not achieved, we have partially achieved, and this is what it means, and quantify it, then we can help you. Because, again, in the same question, if you look at your strategy to overcome those areas of underperformance, again, I have a problem with that. It is well and good that you have a strategy as a, you know, a remedial action to deal with the underperformance. But the question is, look at your strategy. Your strategy is open-ended. You don't seem to have the timelines, and you don't seem to be able to say, okay, this is what we seek to achieve. I'll make an example. 50% of women in your department, you know, is a problem in senior SMS positions. That's just one example. And you say we are addressing that. What do you mean? You're still vague. You need to have timelines to say by this period, this 50% that we're underperforming in employing women in the senior management positions by this financial year, we'll have achieved this. So you must give us clear projections and clear timelines and clear targets. Don't just become vague and say we are addressing that. That's not helping, because you're going to come next year and report that we are still addressing that. So we need to hold you accountable to say, put your head on the block and say, come this period, we will come and report that this issue is no longer the issue that's been addressed. So you go to all programs, your six programs, have looked at it, you continuously say we've partially achieved. And I don't want to say you sound very self-serving, but when you go to your highlights, you've got a beautiful narrative of your highlights. But on the issues of your underperformance, you just simply say we partially achieved. That to me is a worrying reporting. If you choose to be honest, forthright, just do it, you know, in all regards. Don't just push your narratives of the highlights, which are beautiful, by the way, but also be consistent in your reporting. Partially achieved, what does it mean? And then with your strategies, tie them to the timelines so that next year when we sit again, we will go back and look back and say, this is what we have said to achieve, and we were clear on that. There was no issues of being vague and upset. And right now, I'm struggling with your reporting in this regard, and that's Chairperson, my frustration this morning. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Fowl.
Chairperson, I think if we really want to ask all the questions, we'll sit here for a week, not unfortunately for half an hour or hour to listen to presentations. I want to also say that my colleague has touched on a lot of partially achieved. I'm just going to take one thing for instance. Coal for energy, partially achieved. Now, if you look, there is no such thing as coal prices at this stage, as I understand, on the coal pricing and that. And we understand as well, we don't even want to go into the Denton's report, but if you look at that, partially achieved. What are you saying to us? Coming to us saying to us partially achieved. It's actually saying we have no idea. This is, to me, that is how I feel about it, because you cannot sit and tell me today exactly what that is. Now, as the department, I've got a problem. I just looked at some of the things. Administration spent 1.2 million more than projected in the third quarter. Then we have to go and have a look at something like ESCO. If we look at overspending and all these type of things, it's easy to see if you look at the ESCO executive directors. Salary increases was from 8.1 million in 2014-15, all of a sudden to 30 million. Now, I mean, we as MPs have been here since 2015, and I'm still getting the same salary than I got here from 2015, we 2-3 years, from 8 to 30 million. That, to me, is scary. We mustn't say that because of higher spending on compensation of employees. It's exorbitant. It's these type of things, it's not on. But it seems like if you get too much, you become a politician afterwards. But these type of things, to me, is a problem. This is why I say we don't have political heads here to come and say to us why things have happened. And I understand why they're not here. People dismissed for fraud. And then? So people get dismissed for fraud. That's nice. So I steal 3 million rand and I get dismissed. That's nice. I want to know what happened to those people. Why were there not criminal cases open? What was the outcome of the criminal cases? Who was it? These are things that I want on paper, Chairperson. I don't see that here. And these are worries to me. And unfortunately, still, I believe a lot of these are politically. Then I want to know something like the department on the Denton's report. Why, for almost 2 years, this report was just like hush-hush. No one talked about the Denton's report. It could not come out. I want to know from the department, as a department, why didn't they take action on things like this? I think it is your responsibility to do that, to be quite frank. If it cost like 20 million rand, surely, and the department must also, or the state must always bail out Eskom, then I need to understand these type of things. So these are just a few things that I want to touch on. And if we can get answers, I would be quite happy. If we can't get answers, then obviously we do understand why not. Thank you.
Okay.
Just on nuclear energy quickly, I would like to know, what is the situation? Let's be quite honest here on the table. What is the situation now on nuclear energy? Because it is, it's playing this side and that side. Then it gets put to Eskom, and now we're going to have clean energy, then nuclear energy, and then what are we going to have? Honorable Jomat Peters are coming to the NCOP and telling us, hey, Russia's got the contract. Things like this. Please, let us understand what's happening, because these are things that, that should be open here. We look at this here, we've got all these bills coming through, nuclear energy amendment bill, and we've got all these programs, but I would like to know, tell us, what is the situation, for instance, on nuclear energy? Don't let us read it in the newspaper again. Tell us from your side. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kaul.
No, no, yes, thank you, No, thanks to the department, Mr. Makubala and your team, for the presentation. He has taken my first one. I wanted to say, let's get clarity as to where we are in respect of nuclear energy. I think the department owes us that, to say, where are we on nuclear energy? I may have missed with a connection there on slides, I think 9 and 10, CFO, where you spoke about 1 something billion surplus. I got confused a little bit when you talked about that, because in the opening statement, Mr. Makubala talked about being underfunded. Now you talk about 1 something billion surplus that you return to Treasury. Can I get a connection? Can that be clarified? And yeah, I've got issues on, a lot of issues on the partial IT and so on and so forth, but let me center this one around the area where you were talking about not being able to connect, especially KZN and the Eastern Cape. I think it's slide number 31 in your challenges. There's a challenge of connecting additional households in KZN and the Eastern Cape. I'm linking that with slide number 38, where you say electrifying more households in deep rural areas required new infrastructure to be built, in addition to challenges with road access and so on and so forth. You say Eskom and DOE has established a recovery strategy, connections to be completed by Accra 2016. Now, I'm aware that you are reporting one in 2015-16. It was a challenge then. But you say in your statement, this should have been resolved by Accra 2016. Now, maybe it's our mistake that you were late to, in coming to us to report. But now your report is outdated. Can you give us the current? Because by Accra 2016, you would have resolved the issues according to your report. What is the current status? You see, this thing of connections, especially to rural areas, Chairperson, underperformance can really not be pardoned on connecting people, especially in rural areas. At least we can maybe hear issues like you ran short of funds and so on and so forth. But, you know, these are the kind of excuses. When people need electricity, I'm very biased to rural areas because I come from there. Let's get the real reason as to why are people not connected. If they were to be connected after August 2016, what is the situation now? There are many areas like this one. I'm just making an example of this one, where the report is talking to issues that should have been resolved by 2016, whatever month in 2016, now we're in 2017. What is the current status? And all these issues which talk about issues to have been resolved in 2016, what is the situation now? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kaula. Honorable Tsala.
Thank you, Chairperson. My simple question, thank you, DDG. What is the agreement between Eskom and the municipality that holds electricity, especially in the Free State? Is this is not going to have a negative impact, especially in the coming municipalities in the near future. Two, where does the municipalities get free electricity that they supply to communities every month as free electricity? Municipalities buy electricity from Eskom. They sell and make a profit. And there is somebody who's called the middleman. He also gets a profit. How do you regulate this? Last but not least, in a municipality where I come from, in the Free State, Mazitiapofum, there are towns that are directly getting electricity from Eskom. There are also towns that are suffering, especially those from rural areas. They get electricity from municipality. They are using the certificate of the former homeland. And that electricity that they supply to the people, when there is wind or there is lightning, it goes off every time, meaning there is no electricity at all. How are you going to help to cap this? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. Perhaps, CFO, you, as you responded to the question I asked earlier, perhaps if you can also indicate with regard to the surplus for the year, it is on the aid assistance. In 2015-2016, it was 105 million, but in 2014-15, 4 million. Okay, just clarify that. But with regard to the your opening remarks, Mr. McQuarrie, you talked about the lack of implementation of the legislation framework. There were about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 legislation or bills that were supposed to be before Parliament, or they were still to be approved by Cabinet for approval by March 2016. Which one are those? Because I see that there's Electricity Industry Structure Bill, there's National Nuclear Regulator Amendment Act, there's Nuclear Energy Act Amendment Bill, there's National Radioactive Waste Management Fund Bill, and Strategic Well Fund Bill. So those are the ones that have not been approved yet. So, just before you respond, I just wanted the area that were raised by Honorable Makwefu and Honorable Papa on those areas. Areas of underperformance that you want to start. Even though you're going to be responding now, but I would it would be better if that those slides could be reworked, and then we receive them. Perhaps if I may come with a time frame, maybe within 7 days. Though you're going to respond now, but just to clarify this issue of partially achieved, so that members are fine with that explanation. Also, the second one is the issue of time frames. When are these areas of underperformance that are going to be overcome? So if we could have those like addressing those particular issues. The issue of ESCOM that you were raising, I think you raised it as part of the intersectoral contestation. What is stopping, I don't know to what extent, you know, I know it is under public enterprises, but the role that, I think a major role played by Department of Energy with regard to ESCOM. I don't know in terms of the balance
which one plays more roles than the other, whether public enterprises play more role than Department of Energy. But if Department of Energy is playing more role than Department of Public Enterprise, why is the ESCOM then not being transferred to Department of Energy? So that you address these issues of contestation, the issues, you are able also to monitor performance of ESCOM as a department, rather than depending some on these quarterly meetings that you have with the ESCOM on regular basis. Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks to the member as well for the question. Chair, my colleagues are here and they are experts in the various fields, and they will respond. But I think it's important just to say, Chair, that the reason I raised the issue of the intersectoral contestation, when I look, I think this committee has, in my view, could assist us greatly in resolving some of those intersectoral contestations. Because the contestations are not necessarily within just the energy sector. There is contestation as to, industrial policy and the role of energy. So it could be to the advantage of all South Africans that at some point we all need to come and just talk about what each sector of the economy sees the role of energy and so on, because there is a lot of contestation. I'll give an example. As we are employed to do, my colleagues prepare pieces of legislation, they go through, and then you find that we can't even go through our own colleagues in other departments because there is contestation, and perhaps due to lack of understanding of the role of the energy sector and so on. And then you perhaps it's a challenge for us to overcome, that we need to be able to tell people that actually affordable energy can unlock a lot of economic growth. Let's first deal with that and not maybe try and solve other industrial policy challenges using the energy sector. So this is the perhaps I'm being mild in putting it, but the colleagues have done quite a lot of work in preparing pieces of legislation. There are certain hurdles that we can't seem to go through, and that continues year in, year out, and the partially achieved has to be there because we have done everything possible to enable things to happen, and then you find that they get to a point where we cannot proceed because consensus cannot be achieved. Perhaps Mr. Apane can expand on that. Chair, because the AG raised the issue that was raised on the partially achieved, we then resolved that there must be a procedure that's developed internally to explain partially achieved. So that procedure has been developed in this current financial year, explaining what you mean, because a lot of us as managers, we tend to hide behind partially achieved. So So our monitoring and evaluation team has developed minimum guidelines for this year. So in, I think the guidance given by the chair, we will rework the slides and give updates on where things are. But there is a procedure now, which we believe the AG will also, be satisfied with in the upcoming audit. The ESCOM issues are a bit difficult in the sense that there is the DPE reporting, but we will try. I think my colleagues, we will try as much as possible to respond to the committee's question. Just to say on the coal one, again, it's divided mandates on the coal for energy issue, because there's DMR, mineral resources, which now, I think there is, from our side, a view that says they ought to lead on that. We have a major stake, because coal for energy is very important for us currently. And so if nothing is said about coal policy, we worry that going forward we may have challenges. But we can't lead, because the lead department is mineral resources. ESCOM, we may have very strong views, but the shareholder department is public enterprises. But if ESCOM does not do things that are aligned to policy, we have to account. And I think that those are the, when I say contestations, perhaps it's just to say that there is a need for some kind of coordination. And I'm battling to, I think we are battling to see where that coordination really can unlock some of the challenges. But Chair, enough from my side. I think my colleagues can respond to the specific questions, starting with Mr. Rapa.
Thanks. Good morning, honourable members. Chair, through you, if I can respond to the questions, I think that I have made notes about the ones that I can respond to. And maybe just to take off from where my colleague left off about the definition of partially achieved. I don't know if this will help, but this has indeed raised some other questions. But the easiest way of looking at this is firstly that it's in relation to the target. So, for example, if the target is to introduce the electricity amendment bill for consideration support by cabinet, and we say the electricity amendment bill was submitted to cabinet in July 2015, then that has been achieved. So never mind whether it says partially achieved or not achieved or achieved. The actual achievement is the wording that follows after the partially achieved. And so for example, to the point that my colleague was raising, sometimes there are external variables. So the coal issue, we say, if I can maybe just go back on that one, that is on the coal for energy is on slide. Sorry, it's the one that says that the target was to draft a position paper on the coal for energy policy, which would have been developed and submitted for ministerial approval. And then the actual achievement is that the coal for energy pathway is included in the integrated energy plan, which was tabled in February 2016 at the DGs cluster. So that is the actual performance. So, Chair, I think we can go back and reword the linkage between the actual achievement and the planned target without necessarily referring to it
has been partially achieved and so on. And as my colleague has already, without repeating, is that there has been a new standard that has been developed to determine whether 50% constitutes partial achievement and what is a 50% and so on. So, Chair, maybe that the, if I move on and just respond to the question, I think Honorable Faber raised some questions around ESCOM and the extent to which the Department of Energy provides oversight in relation to them. And I think the best way to explain this is that the Department of Public Enterprises is responsible for the so-called ESCOM Conversion Act, which means that the board of, well, and also in respect of the PFMA, which means that the board of ESCOM is appointed by the Minister of Public Enterprises, and they report to that executive authority and not to the Minister of Energy. So where it comes to matters of governance specifically and operational matters, it has to do with the Department of Public Enterprises. It does not have to do with the Department of Energy. However, there is a thin line between that and what you can refer to as the regulatory role under which or under the Electricity Regulation Act, which is the responsibility of the Department of Energy. So, for example, when it comes to coal prices and how much ESCOM's tariff is, that is our responsibility. But when it comes to the nitty-gritty around procuring coal and so on, that's a governance matter, and that is, that's why it becomes very difficult for us to answer on the Denton report. In fact, we haven't even seen the report officially. And I think the same needs to also be understood. It's in the context of the legislative framework around the SOCs as well, that we can have the same, if you like, explanation in relation to municipalities, that Schedule 4B of the Constitution provides that electricity reticulation is a concurrent mandate between local government and national government, the provincial government. Okay, so where it comes to municipal licenses for electricity reticulation, it is a municipal mandate. It's a constitutional mandate of the municipality. That is the constitution. However, historically, sir, what has happened is that because there had been, the constitution was only introduced in 1996, there had already been electricity provision in those areas. ESCOM was given a mandate. ESCOM was given a mandate to oversee the reticulation of electricity in those areas where the municipalities did not have the capacity to take the license over. And it creates a disparity in service delivery level. In the same way, in some instances, municipalities want to take the license back. In other instances, municipalities want ESCOM to take that. So it's a very, if you like, confused kind of situation. But we are aware of instances where just across the board, to give an example, in Ekurhuleni, just across the road divides two areas, two industrial areas, and the tariff on the one side is about 20% higher than the tariff on the other side, simply because of the license jurisdiction applying to different. And we're not saying that it's always ESCOM higher. In some instances, the municipalities are not able to provide the service, and government, national government, has actually asked in certain areas. I'm aware of the TD area in Mpumalanga, where national government asked ESCOM to intervene because the TED had fallen. In fact, even the Transkei electricity department, which was like an ESCOM takeover, was under those kind of circumstances. So I think it answers the question around the municipalities, and then the question around, if I can maybe just move on to the question around the agreement regarding non-payment. And again, because it is a matter which affects ESCOM's governance, and ESCOM's financial viability. It is the Department of Public Enterprises that is leading that process with ESCOM vis-a-vis the municipalities. We, however, get updates, and one of the latest presentation, which was about 3 weeks ago, was that most of the municipalities have come to the party. By, so in other words, they have reached some settlement, whether it means payment or commitment to pay within a certain time frame. And we know that the 10 billion that was in deficit has now been reduced, and I think it's less than 2 billion rands now. And ESCOM keeps using the threat of disconnection in order to get the municipalities to pay more. But then it also leads to the question around free basic electricity, as Honourable Member has asked, and where the municipalities get that and why the middlemen. So the free basic electricity policy is was adopted by Cabinet, and in fact, it goes into the national budget. It's the so-called unconditional grant, and every municipality gets a provision from the fiscus through the equitable share formula. Now, the problem with free basic electricity is how it gets distributed to the various municipalities, because you need infrastructure to be able to do that. So where there are prepaid electricity meters, it is a lot, shall we say, easier, because then the tariff is adjusted automatically down in order to give a discount to the electricity. So that becomes very technical. So it's a very simple technical adjustment to the metering that is done, and then it's offset like that. And ESCOM is rolling that out on behalf of the municipality by agreement between ESCOM and the municipality. Where you have a so-called conventional meters, in other words, meters that are read once every so many weeks or sometimes never read, it becomes very tricky, because then, sorry, I'm not chat through you, but the meters are read sometimes once a month, but in some instances by design they're read once a year. So I wasn't being disparaging. I apologize if it. But I mean, the reality is that sometimes municipalities never read the meter for a long time, and by the time you now try and charge or collect that amount of money, it's too big. And then sometimes they just estimate. So there are those kind of problems. But then, Chair, then the middleman comes in, because in a lot of instances, because the municipalities are not able to manage that, they then introduce service providers to try and do it on their behalf, and therefore I think, Chair, if you look at one of our other achievements, there is a program, I think it's on the slide, it's referred to as Adam, I can't remember what slide number it is. But there is an initiative, and I think Mr. Mulaudi did allude to it as well, areas of underperformance, where we try and address this particular problem around municipal revenue management. Because without proper revenue management, municipalities are very likely going to there for 1 year. So there is a pilot program that has been started in various municipalities in order to be able to manage type of things, and hopefully the question around middlemen and very different ways of dealing with it will go away. But it is a very serious problem, because it threatens. And then, if I can move on to the update, I represent the branch that is responsible largely for legislation and plans. And I'd just like to make a quick comment on the plans and the legislation. Maybe starting with the legislation, is that we have introduced numerous legislation in the parliament. Sorry, in the on the executive side, the Electricity Regulation Act, the National Energy Regulation. These are bills: Electricity Regulation Amendment Bill, National Energy Regulator Amendment Bill, And then 2-3 years ago, the Independent System and Market Operator Bill was also tabled. And they are at various stages. I think the one that is the most advanced now is the National Energy Regulator Amendment Bill, which has been to Cabinet and approved subject to certain things that need to be put in place, and that is being addressed, and we're hoping that in the 17-18 financial year, this will then be tagged for introduction into the parliamentary process. Insofar as the Independent System and Market Operator Bill, and I'm making reference to this because one of the slides, it is referred to as the Electricity Structures Bill. Now, that was processed in Parliament, and it actually even went through the National Assembly, but it was some, I think this is the point Mr. Makubela referred to earlier on, with some contestation, and this was then aborted. And this is now the issue around, it was seen as being an attempt to split ESCOM at that point, and therefore it died in Parliament. Two other, the Electricity Regulation Amendment Bill was tabled at Cabinet, and Cabinet then made the decision not to consider it until the so-called Electricity End State is determined. So in other words, what is the likely structure of the electricity sector in the future, and Cabinet wanted to have a debate or to consider that first before then putting in the legislation. And that's why this will hang, because it's got an external variable that is beyond the management of us as the Department of Energy. Then, Chair, on the two hydrocarbon legislation that are referred to here, to come to the complement of five. The first one is the, if I can refer to the Gas Amendment Bill. The Gas Amendment Bill, again approved by Cabinet, has been pre-certified by the State Law Advisor and was put out for public consultation. And because of the introduction of the Gas to Power program, it was then decided to slow it down in order to make sure that it is aligned with that program. But at this point, it's in all likelihood going to be introduced into Cabinet again in the 17-18 financial year, and hence in Parliament this year. Then I also need to indicate that we referred to the SFF, Establishment Bill. This was to create an institution, SFF, separately from the SEF Act of 1974. And I'm mentioning the name, I mean the year, because it's a very old act, and within the SEF Act, a whole host of institutions were created, including SEF itself, and the funds, plus Petro SA. So the whole idea about the SFF thing was to then manage that separately by creating a new jurisdiction. Person with its own legislation, and there have been some complications in regard to that, and I think the debates are still ongoing as to whether it will proceed this year. I can also indicate that Minister has also instructed that we mustn't over-promise and under-deliver, and it is something that we're also aware of in terms of the legislative process. program for this year. So it's very likely to be the three bills, ERA, as it's called, electricity regulation, NERA, because those have already been through cabinet, and then the gas amendment bill, and then if there is still time, we believe that the other two bills will follow the following year. Then the last point, if I may also just make reference to the question around coal, we see one of the biggest, just to give the committee an update, the integrated energy plan and the integrated resource plan have made very positive progress to the extent that we have completed the stage two public consultation, and at some point I think it might be worthwhile to share them with the committee. The reason behind that is because it answers a lot of the questions around policy matters in the energy space, be it petroleum, gas, or electricity, and it also deals with the current debate around what is our energy mix going forward. In other words, questions around how do renewables and nuclear and coal and gas and hydro and all of those things come together, and what is the happy medium. I think it is the appropriate time to enter that that discussion, because otherwise the questions are seen in a very isolated manner. Mr. McCovella, through you, Chair, I think that answers the questions that I think relate to our side of things.
Can we just respond on this round and come for the second round? Thank you, Chair.
And I apologize for taking too long.
Mr. Makwela, then I depend on you. Will you
dedicate to respond to questions asked earlier?
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Mr. Mbele will deal with the electrification question, Chair, and then followed by Mr. Mbambo on the nuclear energy question.
Thanks, Mr. Makwela. Good morning, Honourable Members. Good morning, Chair. My response is in relation to the challenges around electrification. There has been improvement with regard to electrification numbers. Actually, as we see it, we expect to exceed the 2016-17 target. We had targeted, we had estimated about 245,000 connections. We're expecting to finish just over 250,000 by the end of March. Specific to what the issues are in general in terms of the numbers is that in terms of the numbers, there are issues in relation to capacity, because the program is implemented by, the department monitors the program, but actual implementation is done by municipalities and ESCOM, where ESCOM has a license to distribute. What we found is that at municipal level, there are challenges from a capacity point of view. We've been engaging with COPTA, provincial and national, where, for example, at national, in some of the areas, they've made available engineers to assist municipalities. Specific to KZN, actually last week, we had a session with the provincial COPTA, where they've also reported that they've appointed about three engineers that they've put in the various districts in KZN to assist the various municipalities in terms of implementing the program. So what happens is that the money goes to municipalities, but sometimes municipalities don't have the capacity to monitor the program, which results in delays in terms of delivering the connections. The other issue is the issue of cost per connection. The deeper the rural area is, it becomes more costly, because you have to extend the network towards those areas. And what happens is that it eats into, because the budget is fixed, so it eats into the actual budget, and it's got an implication in terms of reducing the number of connections you can actually do compared to those that have been targeted, and the same applies for bulk infrastructure. But we've been working with municipalities, specific, for example, in KZN, we are aware of, I mean, there are municipalities in four district areas, Ugu, Zululand, Mkanya Kude, Utumbule, and Ilembe, where we know there are challenges, and there are regular meetings with those specific municipalities to try and help them. And we also engaged with the provincial co-opter, which is assisting in this regard. I'll leave it at that, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Chairperson and the honorable members, and all protocol observed. I will deal with a specific question raised by the honorable members to provide the status on the nuclear new build program. I think honorable members would note that over the past 6 years, the program has been led by the Department of Energy to develop the relevant policies as well as preparing for the procurement of the program. At that stage, the Department of Energy was still going to be a procuring agent for the nuclear new build program. However, honorable members should note that in November 2016, Cabinet took decisions around the nuclear new build in the following manner. The Cabinet designated ESCOM as the owner and the operator, as well as the procurer of the nuclear power plant, in accordance with the nuclear energy policy for 2008. In addition, Cabinet designated the South African Nuclear Energy Corporation, NECSA, as the owner, operator, and the procurer of the nuclear fuel cycle facilities and the multipurpose research reactor. Cabinet also affirmed that the Department of Energy would continue to act on its mandate as the policy setting and the coordinating department for the nuclear new build program. Based on this decision of Cabinet, then in December, the state-owned entities, we've already indicated, ESCOM and NECSA, jointly issued a request for information to the market as a precursor to a procurement process. The date in which the market was expected to respond, to indicate its intent to respond to the request for information, was the end of January. And the final close of the request for information, the final response, will be on the 27th of April. So there is the now rules that have been... I think it's the 28th of April. My apologies. It's the 28th of April. The prospective bidders need to respond to the request for information. I think it's important to also then highlight to the committee that the responsibility for the procurement of the various components of the nuclear new build program has now been designated to the state-owned entities, that is ESCOM and NECSA. The department, in its role as the policy setting and the coordinator of the progress of the program, has developed a governance framework which then further clarify the different roles and how the different role players will interact during the various stages of the program, during the procurement, the construction, the operation, and so on. And that governance framework and the implementation protocol is currently under consultation between the department and the key stakeholders. And a draft document has been produced, and this is now currently being consulted. In addition, the department, on its mandate to ensure that there is a policy certainty with regards to the implementation of the program, it continues to develop the strategies for the implementation of the program in the areas of the nuclear fuel cycle, in the areas of the skills development, in the areas of the localization or the economic impact of the localization of the nuclear new build program. So that is the stage where, honorable members, the nuclear new build now is. The state-owned entities are now have issued the request for information, and they expect to receive the responses, and then from there take on the process to then start the procurement process, where they will be issuing a request for proposals. So at this stage, there is no procurement that has started. So that's where we are. The department then coordinates the entire program in consultation with the state-owned entities, and it develops policies that will enable the implementation and creating an environment wherein the industry will implement the program. In short, that's where we are, honorable members. Thank you.
The chair, for your chair, I think there are two questions remaining, one on finances and then the fraud-related question. Perhaps if I can just quickly deal with that to say that in the department, whenever we encounter cases of fraud, we deal with them. Perhaps in the annual report, we may not indicate the names of the person, but you find that there are consequences, and you know, they continue those consequence management on any deviation from prescripts. And I think it's one area that I can say, perhaps even though the owner of the program is Mr. Mulaudzi, that we're very firm on. You step out of line, there are consequences. And I think some, you know, one or two senior managers, even in this financial year, is going to have to suffer the consequences. But I think it's something that is becoming a culture in the department. You step out of line, we deal with you, and we you know, you can then go for other remedies, but at least corrective action that get taken.
Thank you, Chair. I think I'll answer the first question. Mr. Makumeva did mention earlier on that there are financial constraints, but then I come in the end and I say there's a 1 million surrendered to Treasury. I want to put it in context. The budget of 7.2 billion, which I received from the fiscus, 90% of that money goes to implementing agencies and our state-owned entities. So the remaining money is for operational expenditure. So when we say 90% is earmarked funds, I cannot use it for any other purpose because I've got to go back to National Treasury. So that is why you always find there will be constrained resources. So the availability of funding and the needs of the department are not always in sync. That's the first part. To return the 1 billion, I'll put you back onto the slide. 125 million was not spent from the fiscus, from the budget that we received. And if I give you a quick breakdown of the 125, the biggest portion is transfer payments. And the program that was affected was solar water heating, which we requested a rollover for. So that was that reason. It was earmarked funding. And to answer the second question, departmental revenue for 2014-15, it was 5.2, and then in 15-16, 805 million. We received money back from ESCOM. They used to do the solar water implementation, and there was a change in the implementation program, which is now being administered by the department, so ESCOM had to return the money. So you see on the top, 805, I received it, I gave it back to Treasury at the bottom. So it's an in and out. And aid assistance was the last question. In the 15-16, I received a little bit more, 291, but a lot depends on the conditions of the grant that we receive. In the financial year that I'm presenting, unfortunately, they didn't spend more of that funding. In the previous financial year, they managed to spend most of it, and that is why there's such a big difference, 4.2 and 105. That balance is unspent, and I have to send it back to Treasury. It's unfortunate in this financial year they didn't spend more of that money they received. And it's very specific, they cannot spend it for any other purpose but according to the conditions of the grant. Chair, I think I've answered all three questions.
While you're still on, can you perhaps respond on the question of the fruit left? There's this, I think, 12,000 for late payment. Whether there have been any consequences with regard to that, as well as the interest paid on the cancellation fees or membership fees. If you can respond to that. But the other question that should be part of the slides that are going to be reworked has to do with the clean energy program. Of about 29% that was not or the underspending on clean energy. What corrective measures are being made so that we in future we don't find ourselves in a similar situation. So, but that one should be part of the slides that are still going to be reworked. Said if we can just respond to these other two, I feel left.
Yes, Chair, there was a 12,000 in fruitless expenditure. We have referred it to labor relations. Subsequent to the investigation, the matter has been condoned by the Director General of the Department. It goes through various processes to ensure that the official was not negligent in their duties. It's a very stringent process, and after going through that process, it was condoned. And, Chair, I want to give comfort. Once I condone it, it's also presented again to the AG to ensure that I followed due process and I didn't just condone something without due process being followed. So it is further audited, if I can give that comfort. But yet, on the clean energy, as much as I heard you request for something in writing, it is regarding the solar water heating program. We've a year down the line and there's an enormous amount of progress made on that project. But I think when we present our fourth quarter, when we do come back, perhaps we'll give you that progress report. But it will be...
The reason that we say you must get the report in writing within 7 days is the fact that we may not, unlike the portfolio committee of the NA, where you also come there for quota one, quota two, we're unable because of the fair, because we, for just this committee, deals with six departments. And 81 entities. What we normally do, we would invite you to come and present your APP, the strategic plan, the strategic plan and APP, and annual report. Or maybe invite you to come and report on a brief us on a specific policy, how you're implementing a specific policy. So it's difficult then for us to continue to call you to come and report on quarterly performance and all those things. So that's why we won't be waiting for the quarterly report, but we want this to be sent to us in 7 days, because we might not be able to see you. We're definitely going to see you on the strategy and APP, because we'll also be preparing for budget debate. So that, I just wanted to clarify that why we want this information now. We might see you again on annual report. We try to do that this year, but it's not early next year like we've done now. I know you've been to NA around September or so, but you're only coming to us now. And the other thing that we're discussing is whether we should not just have one meeting where you and the entities, Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, you all come with AT so that we just have one meeting where you all report on the annual report. It's something that we're still discussing as a group. We'll allow now, I don't know if you've done that. If you can just switch off here. Honorable members, the second round, I saw your hand, Mr. Makwebu, Honorable Kaula, Honorable Makwebu, Honorable Kaula. Any other hand? Okay.
Thank you, Chair. May I? Chairperson, I want to go back to the issue that Honorable Faba has raised earlier. And I see there's an attempt to respond to that, but I'm still not satisfied with the response. Look, let's be specific here. Let's go to slide number 16 to be specific. If you look at slide number 16 in the presentation before us today, during this during 2015-16 financial year, irregular expenditure to the value of 678,000, that's above half a million there. The matter was referred to labor relations for investigation as the departmental policy, right? 2014 irregular expenditure to the amount of 55,000 was identified. This was due to non-compliance to procurement processes. Let's pause for a moment, and here is my frustration with the department. Now, if this is what you're reporting to us, then this is not sufficient. What happened, what was the outcome of this matter? Has it been a matter dealt in terms of misconduct policies, this irregular expenditure of 678,000? And if so, has this matter, been referred to the police for investigation? Because irregular expenditures could prima facie be deemed or be seen as procurement fraud. And we know that, there's a problem, we'll be battling as a country now, where fraud and corruption is rife and prevalent. So how we deal with these matters, is very important. Now, I do not get the answers here, how you dealt with these matters. There are two ways of dealing with these matters. Departmentally, you proceed in terms of charging the employees with misconduct. But you don't just charge them or dismiss them or they resign when they are being charged. But as a department, you take this matter to the police so that the police will consider if there is merit in the matter to proceed with investigations of procurement fraud and let the public prosecutor or the DPP of the area decide on that matter. But the department cannot just leave the matter and come and report and say the matter has been dealt in terms of labor relations. That's not sufficient. You don't deal with the matter in that way. Same applies to the 55,000 that was identified. Same question I want to know. What happened to that matter? Has this matter been referred to the police? If not, why not? If this matter was dealt in terms of labor relations, which I assume there was a disciplinary inquiry, was the employee convicted of misconduct or acquitted? How did this matter go down? How was it resolved? Because there had to be a way that it was resolved in one way or the other. That's the first part of my question. Through you, Chairperson, the second part of my question is the issue of deviation. On slide number 20, under procurement, deviation not reported to National Treasury and the AGSA within the timeline. Again, here, the department reports to us that is what happened. Now, the question is, what has been done by the department? Surely someone dropped the ball there. And these, unfortunately, are people from time to time, these issues that are left, unattended. Because if this deviation was not reported to Treasury within the necessary timeline, what was the problem? Why was it not done, timelessly? These are the questions I'm battling with, and I'm not getting the answers today from the department. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Honorable Kaul.
Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much for the responses. Let me say, Chair, when I argue my case for all SOEs to be referred back to land function department, I'll definitely quote the Chair and let him I'll definitely coach. Definitely, Chair. I have support from the department and support from the ANC. Chairperson, on the issue of funds return to Treasury. No, but my point is, you may have had to transfer funds to whoever, but you remain responsible, you remain accountable as the department. When people don't receive the service, we look at the department. The grant was given to the department, and the department has had to make a transfer. The department is responsible. Why was money not spent? Because you monitor whoever you give funds to. So it's not just an easy way out to say, no, they did not spend, we have had to return. Why was it not spent? What did you do for the future chairperson? That is important, because not spending means people did not get the service. That is what is important. And the department is responsible for whatever is not spent.
Okay, I'll allow you. Thank you, Chair. I think a garage was built in the Eastern Free State under the auspices of Department of Energy. And it was celebrated by a certain party, One Man Nation, to whom does this garage belong? To whom does it belong? The garage. Does it belong to the community? If yes, how do they get what is due to them, their shares? And whether is it monitored? Thank you. Mr. Makube, and your team.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm going to request the CFO to deal with I think most of the questions. Perhaps I can try and deal with the one of the garage. To say, Chair, this is an integrated energy center, and we have quite a number of them throughout the country. They are owned by the community, all of them. And the whole idea, first of all, is to make energy services available in, perhaps not the main urban areas, but in areas that are underserviced, areas where oil companies don't want to go and open service stations. So that is we partner with oil companies. We structure an ownership where there is a cooperative that is registered, and they are supposed to then run that service station. I can admit here that it's not without challenges, because you find that certain members of that community then become dominant, and then the governance is a challenge. We actually, Mr. Mbele's unit of branch is trying to resolve that, and with the help also of the DTI in structuring cooperatives that are sustainable. Some do work and they benefit the community, not in monetary terms, but then investment is then made into a library in the same area, For example, the one in Bizana, they now have a vegetable garden there. And next to the center that supplies and sells vegetables. So this grows vegetables and then they are sold. So it's things like that. The money is reinvested to the benefit of the community, but not, you know, shares actually or dividends actually accruing to individuals. And I will say that there are challenges with them. It depends on the area and sometimes the support from the oil company itself.
Thank you. You're still caucusing.
Thank you, Chair. I would go to note number 31, 678,000. Let me try the next page. If something is irregular, it means that we have not followed due process in the department. And there was an instance, a supplier was engaged without following due process. And when something happens after the event, it gets tabled at our tender committee for us to consider it. So it's tabled, the members must deliberate on the matter, and then we recommend for the DG to either approve or not. In this instance, it was sent for investigation. At the investigation, whoever investigates, if there is fraud found, the due process with SAPS will be followed. And I think the Corporate Services DDGA is also here to can explain the process a little better than I could. At that process of investigation, if they find this fraud and there's a possibility of a charge, of a criminal offense taking place, it's referred. So it's not in any way not disclosed, if I can disclose that part.
No, Chairperson, with your respect, through you. You see, don't give us hypotheses. If this is an event that happened, you've got to tell us in 2015, 2016 what happened. Don't say, we know the process. Look, you can take me through the four pillars of fraud prevention. We know the process. Let's just respect each other. Give us the specifics. This is an incident that took place. Now, we want to know how you resolved it. Don't say, in the event this is done, these are the processes. We know that.
Okay, Chair, this matter was investigated if the person did not follow due process.
What was the outcome?
It was investigated and it was found that the person, it was still work-related within the work-related, but they just didn't follow the process. Perhaps they didn't, if I could just give an example. They were meant to get three quotations and they only got two. So in this instance, they didn't follow the process. It was investigated and condoned. There was no further, what could I say, there was no criminal act. So it was investigated and condoned.
Not a crime.
So the service that we received was for the department. The person did procure the services but didn't follow the process. That's why it's classified as irregular by the AG.
No, I think if it's always the issue of misconduct, I think, you know, that there are policies, not a policy in the case of the network. And I mean, to condone the effect of the network on the misconduct, I don't think it's a specific. Even if it's not a crime, but it's a misconduct. What everybody said. Continue to do that in that section. And you have such a precedent where a person was not disciplined that the matter was condoned. No final warning, no victim warning, no dismissal, just condoned. So if you can clarify that. What stops that other people say? Because there's a precedent that if you don't follow the processes, and it's not a crime, it's not a misconduct, no disciplinary action. That's
Thank you, Chair. And just to clarify, to say when these letters do surface and are received in terms of permission to adhere to a particular prescription or policy, e.g., you're supposed to get 3 points but you get 2, or e.g., people are supposed to bring 10 copies, they bring 12 copies. So meaning, when they submit an invoice, they submit an invoice for 12 copies, meaning they can see they have been paid more. And then, we then have to submit the matter to labor relations to do the preliminary scanning to determine in which category does this case fall into. Normally, it will follow a category of a misconduct because it didn't follow a procurement process, but there was value for money, value for the department. The department did benefit. But it may have another dimension, which will be, it could be, have been, there are criminal elements in this matter. Then we'll then have to refer to the law enforcement agencies, like you said. But then once the labor relations issues a report that says there is no criminal element in this, this is indeed an oversight which would warrant the accounting officer to condone. But as we make that submission to the accounting officer, there is a paragraph that says, how are you going to prevent these things from not occurring again in the future? And then whatever narrative that has been put there is the information that is being relayed to these individuals to say, you dare do it again, this is what will happen to you if you do it again. So it's in that context that the accountability will be satisfied that we put control measures in place that will prevent this thing from reoccurring again. That in itself becomes a corrective measure to that particular individual to say, don't do it again. If you do it, this will be the consequences. So that is how this matter will be dealt with under the second chain.
You know, when there's a policy, it's different when a person doesn't know the policy. You can say, don't do it again, you know. But when there's a policy and the person breaks the policy, to condone, not to even have a disciplinary action against the person, it's difficult to understand. Very, very difficult to understand. Because there's a service provider here that has been disadvantaged. That if 3 quotes were finished, perhaps that the service provider could have stood a chance being the preferred service provider. So it's not just a small matter. But Mr. Makubela, I think you want to come in.
No, thank you, Chair. Chair, I was going to propose that if acceptable, we be allowed to, because this is a specific case, we be allowed to, when we submit the rework slides, to just go into the specifics of this one case and be able to submit that as well, if that is acceptable.
Therefore, fine. I don't know if you're done with the other persons. Are you done? I think there's this one that is a comment by Honorable Kaula. If you can just take note of that, those departments or entities that receive transfers and subsidies must be able to account for them, and that departments must take responsibility of ensuring that those entities account for those transfers and indicate why they have not used them. They are required. I'll just now give you Mr. Makubela, the closing remarks before we close the meeting.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks to honorable members. As the chair indicated, normally this is for a political principle.
You never know, you might become the new NA one of these days. Say the right things and answer.
Chair, we would want to really, on behalf of the team, on behalf of the DG in absentia, to thank the committee. I think it is a pity, Chair, that these engagements are not as frequent, because through each engagement, I think we go out perhaps sharper than we were, you know, before we came in here. And it is, you know, all the engagements that we, when we come to the select committee, everything is never personal. I'm not saying in other committees it is, but it is about making sure that, you know, we're able to account, we're able to deliver, you know, as expected by the people of this country. And Chair, I can say we will, you know, engage on how we performed today. We will report back and see the gaps that, you know, we've taken note of, and we'll endeavor to improve then the next time around. But I also think that it is perhaps going to be something we have to engage with our principals, that whenever there is a decision that goes public, we make a recommendation perhaps that somehow a note is sent to the committee explaining something, you know, perhaps because of the infrequency of the engagement. That is a recommendation that we will make to our principals. But Chair, once again, and members, thank you very much. And we can assure you that we try and do the right thing as this team under a tough circumstances. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Macwell and the team. We also appreciate that the department has come to present the annual report. But as we will also be writing a letter, as you heard the members concerned about the absence of the minister, or deputy minister, and the DG. There's a general feeling amongst members, not only by the department, but also by other departments as well. There's a general feeling that NCOP is not taken seriously by the ministers and the departments. They would rather prefer, I don't know whether they more scared of the NA than the NCOP. They regard it as a lower house, and they prioritize the NA. I think WISE will be writing a letter as well, but if you can convey the unhappiness of the NCOP Select Committee on Economic and Business Development as well. Yeah, we hope that when we meet again on the strategic plan and APP, your principals will also be present. Thank you very much for coming and also making the presentation. As I indicated, then we'll wait for your responses on the reworked slides on the areas of underperformance. How are you dealing with them? I appreciate first the fact that in your slide you included that, because it also helped to minimize questions. Because when you pick up that you've underperformed, don't wait for members to ask why. You must be able just to indicate why. Then it will be the question of whether members are satisfied with the response.
volunteer. So I encourage you to continue to that. Maybe it will also help you also in the portfolio committee of the NAA as well, if in your quarterly reports as well, you indicate in advance why. You must always anticipate what members will be asking. So by now you anticipate that whenever you come, there will also be this question on nuclear build program. So whenever you go to a portfolio committee or select committee, come, always must come prepared, because in every meeting, whether it's a question, oral question for oral reply, that question will always come. Whether it's a portfolio committee or select committee, that question will be. So I'm just making an example about this one, but whenever you come to the select committees or portfolio committees, you must always think, what is it that members could be asking in your reports? And then you must come then with the questions that are ready. That will also be. I would like a situation where you just come and present, and then we see what's satisfied. Thank you. You can leave. Thank you very much for coming. We will excuse you because we want to continue now as members the internal issues that we will be dealing with just now. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
More.